Woof, woof, woof. How wonderful to have a morning of really woofy, fast-talking women. Wow. I'm the pro. Brilliant, brilliant. So we start with Muti from the Sangomas of South Africa. Muti means power and medicine. True power is that which heals. It is the crucial dynamic. We know in our bones and blood that we don't source power. We invite it. Dedicated acts of beauty serve as an invitation for power to enter the world, and then we offer it a story as a template. You know, humans have been doing this death and resurrection show for at least 30,000 years, which is, when on the equinox and solstices, where the sun's light, you know, illumines the painting or the writing at the back of a cave. Well, this is early sympathetic magic. Come on in, light of sun, and animate this story. So we might say, you know, one of the purposes of being human is to discern the pattern of evolutionary intelligence, the liveliest possibility available at any moment, and offer ourselves to that. Right. So the modern world has mistaken dominance and control for power, and Pluto would chime in and go, that's the toxic mimic of power. Again, we invite power into the world. So we're gathered here at this very powerful, auspicious moment. I will aspire to give it voice. It's so cool. Where, you know, some things are always true, but there are times when they're even truer. So right now, Saturn is stationing in the sky. It looks like it's standing still from the Earth's perspective. You know, any indigenous people would go, ooh, this is a time for Saturn, dedication, deep vows, to participate in the deeper, deeper complicitous creation. You go, ooh, very powerful. So the Muti, you know, is coyote hair and tobacco from Syria when it was once beautiful, may it be again. We say, let this be a cauldron of renaissance. O spirit of the compassionate trickster within each one of us, you know, open the path that we may wed and unite and align with nature's evolutionary, ingenious trickster wisdom. There we go. Okay, so what gives me heart, you know, again, you know, democratic animism now. We have, you know, Lead Now and Democracy Now. I like to call Coyote Network News Democracy Now on mushrooms. the entheogenic realm. So democratic animism, we know the word human comes from humus, dirt. It's where we get our word humble. Human, dirt, and humble are all the same. You know, we're meant to be humbled. You know, it's time for, in a sense, humans to get over themselves. You know, let the hubris of humanism, you know, be composted into nutrient for the truth of animism.
All right.
Yeah. All right. I love the Thai saying that says, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism. Now, they were invaded, but never colonized. So it's evidence of colonized mind, you know, to lose animism, that everything's alive, including story. Everything's alive. Genius is alive and awaiting invitation, you know, cooperators standing by. So sometimes the pattern of evolutionary intelligence will just be on its own, but it prefers a human collaborator. So as we know, with increasing catastrophic climate change and heat increase, some things are doing way too well. Jellyfish, poison ivy. So I love that in Scotland and Diablo Canyon, California, the two nuclear power plants there were clogged by jellyfish. You know, growing jellyfish and soon poison ivy. That they're going home, you know, to block and clog the thing that created them. You know, we go, the idea of, you know, dangerous and poisonous allies, you know, everything. And in the Arctic, it was, you know, last summer, you know, friends of mine, great allies, were, you know, watching the oil rigs being put in place, you know, by Chevron. I'm pretty sure it's Chevron, somebody said Exxon. But a friend of mine who was there said everybody was watching the open water, and then far in the distance came this iceberg, dum-dum, and it headed right for the oil rig, you know, causing Chevron or Exxon, you know, to go, this shouldn't happen, scientifically this shouldn't happen, but we're skedaddling, whoa, you know. And then the tugboat sent to haul it broke down, and the tugboat sent to haul the tugboat broke down, and then the EPA boarded them and cited them for violations. We go, yes, go spirit of the, you know, of the Arctic. So there's also a brilliant, you can Google this, there's a brilliant, you know, British comedian who some years back did a history of oil, Robert Newman, and I really invite everybody to Google it because it's brilliant. Because he says, how many people here know that World War I begins in Basra, Iraq? Which it does. And you can kind of check this out. And he goes, you know, the story that's fed to us is that it was the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. And as Robert Newman says, no one's that popular. And it's the same themes that we're working on. early 20th century, Britain changes from coal to oil to fuel its navy, and Germany wants to follow suit but has no oil-producing colonies. So they begin to build the Berlin-Baghdad Railway. And Winston Churchill and everybody go, no, we can't have this, you know. And they already have it, the Orient Express, you know, from Berlin to Constantinople. And they're just beginning to build in Basra, Iraq, when Britain sends the first regiments to blow up the German railway in Basra, Iraq, and that's how World War I begins. Whoa. So as Robert Newman says, no good war, all those poets, you know, poignant, no good war, it's the same thing. You know, so again, it was, you know, BP right there in Basra, Iraq. It was BP that worked with the friend of my childhood friend, Ann Roosevelt. Her father was Kermit Roosevelt, who, with just a handful of money in the CIA and working with BP, overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran. Also in the 1920s, Iran had a thriving democracy, which the global Western powers suppressed. So we thought it was very important that we note these crucial things. So here we are gathered, you know, so much intelligence, as we say at any good party, who brought what? And I love when I was at a Who Brought What party in the rainforest of Mexico, Terence McKenna said, and here's to the women who eat like the wolves and the men who love them. We go, well, that's good too. So we draw upon all the trickster tales and trickster wisdom. You know, Br'er Rabbit begins by saying, there was times when all the creatures used to gather to sagacuate. Just like there ain't been no hard times, like there ain't been no falling out, like they all remembered they were kin. Oh, yes, trickster tales, we're remembering. So right this moment, okay, part of the power and beauty of now is, okay, in the sky, and let me just animate and reclaim the beautiful astrological language, astro-mythological guiding language, which all cultures have used, you know, on Earth as it is in heaven, studying, tracking patterns, correlation, to discern or divine, take your pick, you know, the guiding intelligence, and offer ourselves as partners to that. Now, it's been, you know, much dissed, and as a colleague says, you know, astrology has become the gold standard of contempt in the modern world. But we want to be, you know, but it is this exquisite and complex language, which is not a belief system, and let us just put on the table, you know, anything, you know, everything wants to be reinvented, all spiritual teachings, all everything, according to the line, does it guide each person to their own lies autonomy, to their own unique inward trickster, or is it another outsourcing, you know, of authority to some external, which is part of the colonial problem? You know, we've outsourced our Saturn, our leadership, to incompetent sociopathic dingbats who've lost a sense of kinship, you know, uninitiated Mars, you know, and now is the time where we inhale it back in, inhaling back in our authority. Our word inaugurate comes from the augur, the diviner, who would walk out into nature, discern the patterns by which nature would reveal the responsible humans, and then they would be inaugurated. You know, all of our beautiful language, etymology, we are mythological archaeologists, we word etymological archaeologists, because when we excavate, you know, it brings us back to a more living, dynamic, and clearer kind of vital language of cooperation. So Saturn stationing right now, again, appears to move, you know, appears to stand still. All cultures would have noted that about it is time to break old spells and take new vows today, really. And it says, you know, and then tomorrow, Saturn, so it's apparently, you know, motion has been retrograde, inward, re, remember, reconnect with old things to which we want to give fresh expression. And it's stationing right now, and then tomorrow morning at 3:51 a.m., it goes forward, which means outward into manifestation. Here we go. So it says, inward dedication magnetizes outward opportunity in the outward journey. And it's this quality of trickster medicine aligning with nature's ingenuity that is the sine qua non, because it renders everything else effective. You know, it's again, you know, working with, you know, Hawaiian, you know, animists, effective animists, you know, when there's a bad project planned, they would gather and invite Pele to disrupt it. And then, you know, Pele, goddess of the volcano, would, you know, erupt right where the drilling platform was being built, causing the scientists to go, this shouldn't happen, let's do it again. It did happen again. Oh, it shouldn't happen, let's do it again. Oh, but tiptoe away. So it's this experimental willingness to cahoot with nature's ingenuity. And the model is the backstage forces of the divine say, we would like to enter to Bound on stage, but we have to be invited. You know, an invitation, again, is any act of dedication, anything physical that we imbue with symbolic dedication. So a ritual is not some hooky thing of stand on your left foot and hop up and down into the full moon. It's any physical thing we do, again, that we imbue with symbolism. So we can sweep the floor, or we can sweep out the past while we're sweeping the floor. This is kind of mojo medicine. So this quality of, you know, trickster medicine and democratic animism now, and many said the purpose of being human is, we got all that. So all moments in time await, you know, eagerly our wonder and our willingness to cahoot. So Saturn stationing, there are images for each degree of the zodiac. It's an old metaphoric tradition, almost being reworked. But right now, Saturn's stationing, punctuating. Its image is woman made fertile by her own spirit. Oh, that's where it is. So everyone, regardless of temporary age, race, and gender assignment, it's like everybody get married to yourself, and again, get married to Big Mama as her agent. But there's so much. Each planet, we're not in a causative model. We're in a pattern, synchronous, everything dancing in accord model. And that if we humans just would, again, cultivate informed, reverent curiosity as our primary way of relating to the world, we'd be back in the choreography of creation. I love botanist Stephen Buhner, you know, who delineates the plants, and he goes, you know, all of nature is saying we're going to either have to kill the humans or heal them. Let's try healing them first. So he says he can walk around somebody's house and notice what weeds are growing there and diagnose the illness of the person inside because the weeds are showing up to heal them. This call and response intimacy. So he said in Washington State, you know, about rethinking invasive species, and you go, magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything in some way. So he says what's called invasive species in Washington State, most of the invasive species showing up are specific for curing alcoholism and depression. Yeah. You know, so it's like, you know, we're trying to spray it with Roundup, but it's like, we're trying to heal you with it. And on the East Coast, as Lyme disease moved up the East Coast, so did this invasive plant called Japanese knotweed, which is the specific protocol of healing for Lyme disease. So again, this, you know, partnership. So not only, okay, Saturn stationing, each planet represents a living quality of intelligence that resides within us and connects us to that corresponding quality in the world. So Saturn is how we define things, how we define leadership, all of those things. So it's stationing in Scorpio, deep inner smolder, sizzly, and brings forward this crucial concept of complicity. Not shame, not blame, but complicity. Whatever is going on, we are contributing our chi to it, you know, and when we recognize that, we can inhale our chi back. I like to say we're going to suck the chi out of the tar sands pipeline and exhale it into the desirable thing. You know, we're not going to fight the coal plant, we're going to compost it into nutrient for the desirable. Let our metaphors be in accord with nature. You know, so when people go, I really want to make this concrete, I go, concrete, really? Maybe. Trickster says, no rules, just guidelines. And Trickster says, we don't even care what you humans do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it be from freedom and choice. And that includes linguistic and metaphoric. But we say, you know, we know the model, you know, for years here and everywhere, I've been just saying, part of the frame story. The outer planets represent huge forces of nature's, you know, evolutionary intelligence, and they're the keepers of the whole big guiding frame story in which we're a part. So part of where we are right now is Pluto represents death and rebirth in Capricorn, structure of the world, bridges and dental work and things and government, and, you know. So again, like Robert Newman, we have empire and dominance, when did this go wrong? You know, empire and dominance, row you bastards, you know, in which spirituality, you know, tolerated sometimes and sometimes exiled, but not really making everything better tangibly. We are here to vow to be pragmatic mystics, meaning all spiritual and philosophical knowledge teased into pertinence to make the world more beautiful for all beings. You know, so Tibetan Buddhism, fabulous, exquisite, cultivating thing, but the lives of actual Tibetan people, women, animals, 14th century feudalism. You know, it's like when the Dalai Lama first came to America, a friend of mine was you know, sitting there, and somebody said, well, what about, you know, Tibet's creepy karma? What's that about? And the Dalai Lama said, only once, never again, because of our terrible treatment of women. Oh, Dalai Lama. So this model again, so Saturn is the part of us that unconsciously receives the, wait a minute, I'll put that over here. Okay, let me begin. So Pluto, death and rebirth, you know, row you bastards, you know, runs on fossil fuel, and now it's collapsing. I mean, it's taking so much life with it, which is, you know, but going, you know, down, and then underneath, Pluto squares 90 degree angle to Uranus and Aries again, trickster, fresh, inventiveness, collaborate with everything, collaborate with nature's ingenuity. So dominance, empire going down, collaborate with everything, cultural renaissance coming up. So as all of my brilliant colleagues both presented in the great conversations, our task is where there's hyper-yang, death frenzy, uninitiated Mars, to be Venus, to be inviters. So we go, you know, all right, everybody, come on over from the thing that's collapsing to this thing which is coming up. So our purpose and our capacity in this gathering here and forevermore is to conjure, cultivate, animate, magnetize the most irresistible, guiding, metacultural story and spiral it out into the memosphere. Now, so we say the purpose of ritual magic, Saturn and Scorpio, backstage mojo magic, was always for a dedicated group of humans, you know, to spiral into group human mind an expanded repertoire of wisdom and tolerance. And we here on one of the most serene and safe parts of the planet, you know, have gathered with this enormous luxury to spiral again an ever-expanding repertoire of ingenious responses out to everybody, who, especially those who are in hot, reactive circumstance. So if we love freedom and democracy and cooperate with everything, then to react to anything, you know, is to carry around the portable prison for oneself and others. You know, it's a hot, reactive, self-indulgent form of tantrum yoga. You know, to cultivate an ever larger repertoire of responses, then we're aligned with nature's evolutionary ingenuity, with backup, that is crow, oh, so glad that crow presented, crow, raven, coyote, you know, I live with a coyote for longer than I've lived with a human, we go, and it's the quality in nature that comes alive in cataclysm, seeds that sprout after flood or devastation. By analogy, it's the part of us that comes alive that loves against all odds. I mean, other parts of us are like, but the trickster part goes against all odds, perfect.
Yes.
It is resilient. You know, resilient means to jump again. You know, it is that quality of resilience. So part of the dynamic of now to be inviters again, coming on over, you know, as Alan West said, no sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you. So it's like, over here we're magnetizing this. James Carson's brilliant book, Finite and Infinite Games, in which he says a finite game is about winning, an infinite game is about keeping everything in play. And he says one of the problems about credentials or status or being president or anything like that or a PhD is that it is a temptation to surrender, you know, the infinite game possibilities into the finite game. And he says when artists are primarily against something, they're giving up an enormous amount of freedom. You know, they're entering a finite game about winning an opposition rather than an infinite game of magnetizing the Renaissance. So wonderful druid, ally, smart guy, John Michael Greer says, if you want to get people to do nothing but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something. What two needs is three, which is the unifying story. You know, come on in, we're all in this dream together. So part of the beautiful, to me, dynamic of the choreography of the Astro Mythos story is Saturn's stationing, Uranus representing the trickster, also stationing. Saturn goes forward tomorrow morning, and at 16 Scorpio, Uranus in the sky is at 16 degrees of Aries. It's a beautiful assignment to bring old things alive in a fresh new way. Mm-hmm. Whatever we're dedicated to bring it alive in fresh, hip vernacular, so many social media ingenious beings doing great work, it's exactly that. To smuggle ageless wisdom into mainstream, going, nothing to worry about here. And that idea of positive intrigue, You know, the utopian Fourier said, in any ideal community, we must allow for the passion for intrigue. Because when people conspire to pull off something good, it draws upon more elegant parts of their inventive psyche than just kind of so we go, yeah, we're part of a positive intrigue conspiracy. And this woof woof wanna play, so, you know, whenever there's clicking on my phone, I go, oh, you cute NSA, you know, and I'm so excited to hear about the NSA transcription services. This could really help me finish my book, you know. For a small fee, if you could just send me a transcription of my conversation, that would be so useful. The airport security combination, airport security pap smear, you know, we'll go, that would be so boring. Playing, you know, and I use that at the airport security, and they like it, because part of our skill set is whatever we speak to in another is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves. Which is why we don't want to judge somebody. Our addiction to finger-wagging righteous disappointment is so much a part of the progressive thing. Until now. Because, you know, when we judge somebody, we're inviting the least evolved part of them to dance with the least evolved part of us, and which is never pretty.
Right.
You know, so wise dynamic. So this is, you know, we can't even be who we want to be by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this horrific, you know, demented pickle. You know, that's the purpose of vows, especially now, especially this whole time we're gathering. We put down, hold me to this, oh, however we address the, you know, spirit of woof that animates the universe. You know, hold me to this. This is the art form, the ongoing art form of how I want to be. You know, I want to be trickster and spicy and disruptive, but kind, you know, not mean, but you know, these qualities hold me to this. And it's really just, you know, the mundane and the huge, you know, so part of the, you know, myriad forms of trickster training that I love to animate, you know, we're all befoibled and equal. So I go, you know, one of the great things, the default setting is, you know, Esther Hicks says, we can't change anybody by arguing or convincing, which means to conquer or whatever. We can see them connected to their own wise autonomy. And it is such a good default setting to practice, because it works. And, you know, even with rude people, you know, talking in the back of one during a movie, you know, and see, at first we would serve empire inadvertently by going, shh, right? And then you have that polarity, and you're almost hoping they do it again. See, you do that thing. It's like people who sprint across parking lots to go, you're smoking. You know, but anyway, but you know, right, you're almost hoping. But if you go, no, I see them connected to their wise autonomy, and it really does work. So just a little mundane example, you know, it's like, see them connected to their own wise autonomy, critique, diagnose. I like putting the hyphen in diagnosis, dia hyphen gnosis. May criticism always remember that it was always intended to heal, to draw upon all wisdom, all gnosis to heal. So I go, I want to critique and bless, you know, may it go well for you. We say critique without vision is complicit as with dominance. You know, it's that model of we all have a magic mirror in our backpack, you know, the secular critic within us all, important, holds up mirror and goes, here, it sucks in detail, and as many of us and then you hold the mirror to yourself and go, I suck in detail too. And then with a wave of the hand, turn the mirror into a window, which is all these brilliant, brilliant presenters are doing, window, look how beautiful it could be. And then with another wave of the hand, turn it into a door. Let's go. So it's mirror, window, door. You know, and it's like, I was in a coffee shop, you know, and somebody came in and was just, you know, really rude, not to me, just to the person behind the counter, and I got internally entangled. I did not see them connected to their wives, I get, and I was like, and I did not bless them, and I was like, and so it was, I was not doing my thing, so when I went out, the parking guy was writing me a $50 parking ticket, but I got busted by my own vow, you know. Reactive, going, oh, and I yelled after the guy, the parking guy, I go, I hope you get a better job. You know, and he goes, I hope so too. So I sort of snuggled a, you know, a grumpy blessing in there somehow. And then later reflected, going, all right, you know, fair enough. I got busted, you know, because it's part of our skill set. When something's going wrong in our personal or large life, we go, I wonder why I would have scripted the movie this way. In case I've been hiring people to disrespect or, you know, do whatever, or whatever, in case I've been hiring that in the movie, I'm in major story rewrite. You know, we're inhaling all the old scripts, all the old vows we might have taken that have become spells, you know, and composting them into new vows of dedication, so powerful now, and so, you know, available. And so, Saturn, Uranus, okay, that's where but then Jupiter, and so I was so thrilled to be anywhere this week. This is especially perfect, but again, we're connecting with so many people all dancing in the same story, and the story is alive. So Jupiter represents curiosity and storytelling and the power of blessing. And just a day or so ago, it changed sign, it changed adverb from Cancer, which is wonderful, and our great ally Rick is a Cancer, Sun in Cancer. How many Sun in Cancer people are here just for the fun of it? The great astrological joke, my friend Jay Jacob said, Cancer's just a Scorpio on a house coat. all signs of their PR, but the Cancer's just like, I'm just in a bathrobe, don't mind me. nobody happy, going, oh, yeah, that's very moody, man, okay. But it's so interesting that Jupiter in this language, storytelling is exalted in Cancer, which is emotional intelligence, feel what's needed and respond. You know, the understanding that everything's alive. And it's like in the Arabian Nights, which is one of the quintessential frame trickster stories, one of the storytellers says, people need stories more than they need bread. You know, again, the story guides the molecules of the incarnational reality. You know, so again, what story are we in? You know, and how do we want to compost the old stories and ladle out the new ones with our language and our metaphor lined up? You know, so let all natural facts be social strategy metaphors. If we want to protect wolves, become more like wolves. If we want to serve water, become more like water. You know, in that collaborative ingenuity, you know, this quality. And that engages the invisible mojo backstage. It's like, things I carry with me always. Lakota Elder on radio a long time ago said, you know, wow, you know, Coyote's so smart. And he said, you know, we Lakota didn't hunt alone. You know, every so often, like now, those, you know, gifted would kind of go backstage into reverie and they would broker a treaty, a collaborative treaty across species borders. And we would hunt with the wolves and coyotes for a season. And if you want to destroy a culture, destroy its capacity to form cross-cultural, you know, alliances with plants and animals. And then you can walk all over it, and you can not only do that, but you can shame people and call them sentimental because they care about life. You know, so part of the there's all this arguer part of all of us who can go backstage into reverie, you know, and be the part that emerges going, okay, it wasn't easy. The coyotes want the front left leg of half the deer and every other liver, you know, and the wolves are cool with that, and the deer are cool with that. All right, everybody back on stage. You know, we design the story backstage and go, is this fine with you? Is that fine with you? Okay, let's go. So Jupiter in Leo says we've been getting ready for 12 years for showtime. Jupiter in Leo is theater. It says create theater or live melodrama, you know, in the world. And we go, right. So Jupiter's got an initiatory dynamic and it says, what stories do we not want to take with us to further animate? You know, really from this moment on, you know, it says, you know, the retelling of sad old stories, you know, it's useful to air it out, but it says you have until 3:51 a.m. tomorrow morning, and then, you know, done with your stuff with daddy. You know, when my child was like, no, you know, that suffering is not a credential, it's an assignment. You know, oh, my parents didn't listen to me, what is it? And you go, excellent, you know what it's like to not have a voice, so your dedication is to be a voice for all those things that don't have a voice, you know. You know, we go, you know, we're composting a wuzza-wuzza, you know, tragic romantic melancholy, oh, romantics killing themselves all day. You know, and the mistaken thought that one is a genius on one's own. Had a really fun conversational cafort with Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote You Pray Love, don't hold that against her. Sold 26 million copies, but it was like, no, it's okay. And I met Kajik Lingalier in Bali, and I was so delighted that he was like, I had no idea who that woman was. Anyway, but in 7 years, she's written this dazzlingly brilliant book, The Signature of All Things. It's dazzling. And it's about the history of botany. And it's this fabulous woman character. But where we cavorted on the magic of words and on genius is invited. We don't source it. And the kind of spiritual prison of German romanticism or tragic romantic melancholy, you know, was always like, I am a tormented genius. And it's a partnership. You know, and I said to her, you know, Terry Pratchett says, genius is always sleeting through the universe until it finds a receptive molecule. And then it's like, Shakespeare. to all of us, it says, where would we like to invite genius? Our inward dedication strengthens our signal. So we're more likely to connect with people with shared vision, but also to magnetize genius as a collaborative ally from which we do not derive status. You know, the Grail legend is full of this. Sir Balin and Sir Balan are given charisma and charm and magic swords from the fairy realm, you know, as a gift to do good in the world. But then the fairies say, don't take credit for it, and by the way, we'd like those swords back. And Sir Balin and Brian go, no, we are unsupervised boys, you know, we are going to put macro genes in this tomato because we can, because we're, you know, and the fairies say, oh, it's not going to go, you will kill the thing you most love.
And they're like, oh, we don't care, we're boys.
And they did, they end up killing each other. So we go, right, and then what I also wanted to bring alive is, you know, in her book, again, collaborative genius, and it clearly worked for her, because there's, you know, we know those moments where we're better than we are, and that's the idea of taking the backstage vow, and for those of us who work in media, it is so effective to backstage going, all right, trickster, you know, grant me the capacity to be a responsible voice for all of us and guide me to not get entangled in the wrong questions, only address the questions I wish had asked, you know, there we go, and it so works. In which, you know, I've watched things going, oh man, I was much better than myself. Wow. Something else was guiding, a collaborative partnership, which is what makes the transformation of culture a sporting possibility. Because Jornis, the trickster of ingenuity, also says it's associated with the ideas, ingenuity and trickster, and that which likes unstable footing, and all those wonderful things in nature. And the last ideas associated with it are democracy, equality, synchronicity. And because I love this language, you know, wondered, well, what do those guys have to do with each other? And no sooner did I ask, wondering, just even the physical mudra, you know, turns our body into a beseeching chalice of invitational inquiry. Well, let's just wonder, just do the mudra, come in for the fun of it. We wonder, see, because again, wonder then attracts the lightning of revelation into it. Boom. So we wonder, and Jornis says, there wasn't one more thing here, Jornis says, I'm going to connect you to the coolest things possible, and all I want from you guys is willingness. And we go, we're willing.
We're willing.
And the gods go, they've hoisted their sails of willingness, and they've opened their invitational chalice of wonder. Now we can work with them. You know, so part of the, just another briefly, part of this beautiful language to introduce, you know, Jornis, Pluto, Neptune are the outer planets. Large by energetic symbolism, even if not by mass in Pluto's case there. Neptune represents dreams, vision, mythology, you know, how a culture tells itself its own story through the images that circulate through mass mind. So Neptune now is stationing also, looks like it's standing still in the sky, at 7 degrees of Pisces, whose image is girl with a bugle calling in a new tide of cultural energy. And Neptune represents the invisible tendrils that actually lead culture, on which the molecules of what we think of as reality follow along behind. So each one of us, you know, Neptune says to each one of us, imagine that the most shamed, the most exiled, the most whatever, the deepest kinship part of our psyches is about to be completely welcome. Like, wow, exile over, ollie-ollie income free. Everyone who wandered in the woods or in different forms of being in a witness relocation program. You know, it's like, come on back now. Come on back to contribute gift. You know, the time is now. You know, showtime is going on. So Neptune again says the power of dreams and vision and the power of sacred theater. You know, in ancient mind, healing and theater were one thing. Ancient mind would not know what we were talking about if we talked about hospitals and movies. Neither good. You know, and they're going, what do you mean? There can be no healing without theater and no theater without healing. So in the sky story, always true, but they're coming into alignment going, right, you know, the power of backstage dedicated mojo and then the celebration to invite the power in. The death and resurrection show is one of the ways in which humans tell themselves the history of storytelling and theater, that it was always, again, to invite something powerful into the dynamic and then offer it the story to animate. So, you know, our word opportunity, Jupiter's opportunity, comes from ab portu, which means on deck and ready to sail. A lot of our wonderful words are from, you know, the sea, the ocean. So part of that dynamic is, you know, we have myth, Neptune, myths, very cuckoo and witty, that ISIS has been in the news so much, right? I go, oh, mythological literacy, we must restore you. Because I, for years, have had this bumper sticker on my car, ISIS, ISIS, rah, rah, rah. And 16-year-old friends were driving by and going, you know, and saying to my neighbor, why is your neighbor supporting terrorism? Because ISIS has been, you know, the acronym for the Islamic State for Iraq and Syria, you know, and it's, but it's like ISIS, so they're yelling the antidote to what they're doing, you know. So it's also part of the dynamic in all fairy tales and detective novels is to invite the up to no good to have a change of heart. Going, ISIS, wow, you made $40 million known as stealing from a bank in one day. You could join the Threshold Foundation. Space money for you. But so in myth, and then the more intimate version, which is fairy tale. Now, myth and fairy tale, you know, and theater and ritual and science were all happy together. You know, it's like last year, neuroscience proudly proclaimed, we, neuroscience, have just discovered that people remember things better when they're in a story. We go, oh, you cute little neuroscience, you little whippersnapper. So just, you know, again, brief examples. How am I doing on time? Oh, great one. I'm okay. Okay, so just little examples to feed this. You know, that the myth and the fairy tales, again, that's just a myth, that's just a fairy tale, were how a culture passed on its intimacy with its environment, its literal knowledge of sky and astronomy and biology. And just a little example, William Irwin Thompson did a brilliant analysis of the fairy tale Rapunzel. Do we remember Rapunzel? Rapunzel, right down here, on here. So we remember, just again, micro briefly. So it begins with the pregnant woman, and she's looking up and over the wall into the witch's garden. She's looking backwards in time, at a time of her pregnancy, her gestation. And she craves this Rapunzel or Rampion, this dark green leaf. And she sends her husband to get it. And the second time he gets caught by the witch, who goes, I'm going to take the child with which your wife is pregnant. And she takes the child and puts her in a tower where Rapunzel sends out two golden braids, and the witch crawls up, and then one day Prince is coming by, and he crawls up the braids, and then he goes on, and then they have twins, and so I go. But what Thompson teases from this, and it really is there, is the orbital cycle of the moon, Mars, and Venus, but also the history of sex and death biologically on the planet. And he says, looking backwards in time, biological time, you know, we have one-celled organisms that are duplicating themselves. They're called mother-daughter cells. So there is no individuality, so there is no death. And then he says, and it's so obvious, it's like, so once we have sex, we have death. They come together. I go, of course. Because once you have sex, you have individuality, and then you can have the death of the individual. Mm-hmm. You know, so when he's researching it, he goes, well, Rapunzel, this plant, you know, Rampion, is probably good for pregnant women. But what he finds is the plant is the story. That Rapunzel or Rampion grows up like a tower, and it sends out two golden braids to attract pollination. And it's one of those plants that can self-pollinate, but it prefers sex. We go, this is brilliant! And it goes on and on. We go, so myth and fairy tale, you know, were the conveyance of intimacy and lore and botanical knowledge from micro to macro, passed on, you know, and then we dissed it, you know, as a mean trick of the reality police to render, you know, people obedient by making these false divisions, you know, heart or mind, you know. We go, both, it's a democracy, you know, physics or metaphysics, they love each other. You know, science and myth and fairy tale love each other. These were partnerships. Before, again, you know, a friend of mine calls, you know, St. Paul the early Karl Rove. Before the early original liberating teachings of anything were kidnapped into service to outsource Saturn and the grinding sociopathic, you know, wheels of imprisoning state function. You know, and so it's a long history that we're here to break the spell of and metabolize, you know. And so myth and then fairy tale is the more customized local version. You know, as my friend Gioia Tupinelli says, you know, part of a fairy tale is both to, you know, careful living in a particular place, this crow, this badger, this tree, and then equally is the journey. So Neptune says we're all in a fairy tale, and so many people here are in a nomadic state, and that's why Neptune says, we recommend everyone run on the fuel of wonder. You know, I wonder what my next move is. I wonder. It's a very not modern world playing a game of musical chairs. You know, music stops, one chair gone, everybody scrambles for, you know, a job or relationship chair. But the ancient part of us goes, never wanted to play musical chairs, going free range. And in ancient mind, not knowing but wondering was considered a very advanced accomplishment. Look, that humans run out of certainty. Certainty's a booby prize. And they're available for divine inspiration. How wonderful. So this wondering realm. So myth, fairy tale, and then detective novel. Okay, I love detective novels because they're the even more intimate vernacular form of big mythic themes. And I was wondering, well, when do we get the first detective novels or crime novels? 221 BC. In China, one of the earliest detective novels, you know, still existing on bamboo papyrus. And I go, cool. And it was Judge Dee, you know, 221 BC, a wise magistrate, whose assignment was to journey into the underworld to restore human affairs to be in accord with the mandate of heaven. It's fabulous. So this noir element, because in detective novels, it also gives us a guidebook of how do you journey to the underworld and make it back. You know, and you need a jaunty trickster thing. You need the innocent dignity of child heart informed with wicked savvy spice. You know, and in all of the detective novels that start in China and then come up into the modern world, we need the skills of the underworld. Very often the hero detective will encounter, you know, somebody who wants to kill him, a swindler, a highwayman, a robber. Remember that Milarepa, one of the greatest saints in Tibet, was a murderer, a highwayman. So this often happens that the murderer, the highwayman, encounters somebody of dedicated, calm purpose and goes, ooh. Yeah, I have a change of heart. I want to be on your team, but I'm bringing a whole lot of skills. I know how to, you know, hack stuff. I know how to, you know, tap into things. I know how to, you know, do all this. And you need these skills. And that's part of the model, you know, of inviting. And when we go back to Isis, the myth that is being shouted erroneously everywhere, one of the part of the Isis myth is in Egypt, Isis is again kin to Inanna. She's the goddess of the earth, she's the fertility, and she's the antidote to the acronym Isis. But in one of the Egyptian myths, when the sun's chariot gets stalled and the earth is about to burn up, burning into now, and everybody goes, oh, what do we do? There's only Set, who is the god of evil and darkness, that we have to turn to because he's got another chariot. So they go, oh Set, you god of evil and darkness and oil and bad. Now, will you help save the world? And they go, and he goes, without the world, there'd be no place for my evil. So sure. So Set saves the world. You know, so again, our invitational, you know, there is no agency, no whatever, no human being so, you know, colonized that they're not available as we move our emotional default setting to woof woof wanna play. You know, and expanding our repertoire. So it says, well, how about, you know, we go big. If we want, you know, to design a really big culture, how about to compost retribution and reaction and punishment, you know, into wisdom? How about people are sentenced by judges by throwing the I Ching? We sentence you to 5 years of jazz saxophone camp. And they go, goodness, what happened to you to so harden your heart? How do we heal you, we wonder? And it says to all of us, you know, how about, you know, what about if in Pluto's cauldron, you know, this gathering too, we were willing to give up our addiction to having an enemy? That we're no longer hiring people, you know, that oppositional dynamic. You know, the Israeli state created Hamas, literally. They dragged the blind sheikh out of prison and funded him as opposition to Arafat. And then we're surprised when it came alive, you know. They need each other. Again, uninitiated Mars with no sense of kinship needs each other to fuel that kind of that. We want to suck the chi right out of that. And again, realizing with humbleness that we humans can't do it to set the atmospheric mojo backstage. You know, Eddie Izzard, love Eddie Izzard, you know, says, you know, Star Trek, a very advanced civilization, yet their phasers only had two settings, stun or kill. We need more phaser settings, like sudden interest in botany setting. I will kill you all in the left kettle on at home setting. I will kill you. Oh, wait. So expanding our trickster, you know, fierce blessing, we're allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipients. You know, may all those abusing power be moved to a place they can no longer harm themselves by harming others. And we include ourselves, you know, sure. You know, so there's that, you know, dynamic. Again, we know the Hafez line, the small man builds prisons for everyone he meets, but the wise woman, you know, all of us, ducks under the moon and tosses keys to the beautiful and ratty prisoners. So You know, July 26th coming up is just a fun birthday. The Trickster Training Council will be convening. You can ask me. But it's Carl Jung's birthday, George Bernard Shaw's birthday, Mick Jagger's birthday, Kevin Spacey's birthday, Stanley Kubrick's birthday, and Aldous Huxley's birthday. And I go, it's time we can start giving them a birthday party. What if Mick Jagger had been actually singing Carl Jung? It'll be much more fun. Like, I am satisfied. Rock star, you know, so ignorant as to be on the stage at Altamont while violence is breaking out, going, everybody be cool, everybody cool, and then going right back into Street Fighting Man, oblivious to the magic of the Death and Resurrection show of what he was inviting. You know, so where we begin to deconvene here, you know, same reverent common sense. I love my ally Steve Behrman, known as Swami Beyondananda, says the answer to the drug problem, improve reality. Improve reality. In fact, that's our policy about everything. You know, so the Rauti is a great thing that Elizabeth Gilbert brought alive, you know, a Polynesian, a Tahitian tradition. The Rauti, Jupiter Leo, is the exhorter who shouts out your ancestral mojo of encouragement, going, you are not the son and the grandson and the granddaughter and the great-granddaughter of these people and this lineage and the power of the Celts and the Syrians and the whatever to just lie there. No, get up and, you know, dance with the creation. So we go, that's wonderful. We love that kind of dynamic. So, you know, the last thing, this is what I'm bringing, unfolding more of these things too. But Mars energy, what we reward in men and all, in Libra, in Venus's sign. You know, let us redefine heroism as that which makes dedicated beauty in the world. And in fairy tales, Mars is our ride. It's our energy. It's the energy we run on microcosmically, internally, and the energy fuel we run on as a culture. Now, we want it to be polite. You know, so all the gods and goddesses are, you know, they have a ride. I love Akilanda, who's a previously little-known Hindu goddess. She's the power that comes from being broken on the floor, and she rides on the crocodile of her own fear. Going, woohoo! Okay, and you know, maybe if people were like, bring her back, yeah. So we say to each one of us also this week, you know, what is your ride? You know, Durga rides on a tiger. And what it relates to in fairy tales, when Prince Kaneda sets forth to, you know, become a wise ruler, he's accompanied by a wise, shaggy, humble pony. And at some point when he gets to impossible things, the burning river in the glass mountain, the pony says to him, let go of control. Give me my head. Let the reins go slack because I know how to get us through this. And so that's what Kaneda does. He hangs on and they soar over the burning river and up the glass mountain and tame the waters of life and save the world. You know, and alive indeed. And go, yes. And then the last little bit, and I'll take it out into the afternoon. We love the word respect. It means to look at again. Respect. You know, keep looking. It's the antidote to prejudice, which means having an opinion about something before one has the full story, and we never have the full story. And the Black Christian Southern teachings say, there's no one we couldn't love if we really knew their story. So the return of Venus, and what I'll be animating in Trickster Training next week, and also this afternoon, is wherever there's Mars, let us do beauty poker. And it comes from the Middle East, blessing poker. I see your blessing and raise you one. You know, may the gods waft, you know, pomegranate blossoms along your path. You know, I see your blessing and raise you one. May the gods waft pomegranate blossoms and may your lover kiss you on the neck right where you like it. And see you. Again, wherever there's this conflict, may there be beauty. Here's a beautiful song from our culture that is beautiful. Here's an even more beautiful song from our culture that is beautiful. Beauty poker, and we go, oh, it's the same song. So again, we just we go, okay, many more things to say, but later. From Ethiopian, there's a word aizan, which means the invitation for great power to come into the world for everyone, you know, to be, you know, to have delight in their arduous and daunting journey. So we just go aizan, aizan, aizan. And from French circus, alley-oop. You know, which is aliyup, which is the assist. We go, you know, may we have a culture of reciprocal blessing. May it go well for you, and we go aliyup. And then to announce our willingness to cooperate with the ingenious, you know, to apologize and cooperate with the ingenious wildness in nature, and especially coyote, we just go yip yip aloo. Yip, 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 yip.